And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
How about we can just watch basketball?
I like that idea.
Wow.
It shouldn't take this long.
Welcome to the Weekend Update with Dave Dufour and Keith Parrish.
Every Monday on the Athletic NBA Show.
It did the same thing to me that it's intended to do to the world.
Ding, ding!
I have access to information that the public doesn't.
Hello and welcome to the Athletic NBA Show Weekend Update Daily Ding. I'm Dave Dufour, here with Keith Parrish to wrap up the weekend. And man, we had a Game 7 on Sunday. Boston Celtics were there. Keith, 76ers didn't really ever show up. 112-88, the final score. And frankly, by the end of this, Keith, it felt like a 50-point differential. This was a complete annihilation by the Boston Celtics. From about the middle of the second quarter on, the Sixers were just completely out of it. And we got to tip the cap. Jason Tatum had a terrible three quarters in Game 6, an amazing fourth quarter that kind of speared their win, brought them into a Game 7, and just did not stop making shots. 51 points, now the most points ever scored in an NBA playoffs Game 7. Jason Tatum was ridiculous in this game.
Yeah, I mean, this Mother's Day Game 7, I can't be the only one who's like, I'll run a short errand at halftime. I'll get back, catch the exciting conclusion to this close game, and then I look down, and I'm ready to catch up. And like, wait, how did the Celtics get up by so much? And it's just Tatum. And then as you watch like the end of the game, it's just Tatum keeps coming. And you saw the Sixers, their spirit was broken. Like Tobias Harris was the only guy trying. By the end of the game, I mean, it was brutal. And this is like, again, it had been a back and forth series. It had been a weird series. You'd had the Sixers winning without Embiid, the Sixers going up 3-2. Now we're going to talk nonstop. Everyone's going to talk about Doc Rivers and this incredible streak of failing to make the conference finals when having a 3-2 lead. Like he's lost, what is it, 11 straight when he's had a chance to go into the conference finals? Like that's nuts. And yeah, they were the underdog, but the way this game went, and you had the same similar storylines of like, oh, James Harden, what happened, dude? Like, are you just at the beginning of the game? It's like, oh, he's trying to set everyone up. And then as it went on, you're like, oh, this is just what he does. I don't know, but maybe they couldn't have done it. Maybe if Jason Tatum's going to do this, if he's going to set the record for the most points in a game 7. Although with inflation, Dave, this is like a 1990s 44.
You might be right about that, but we should note, I mean, if you look at the box score, it's pretty easy to tell the story offensively for the Celtics because the rest of the guys really weren't all that good. It was Jason Tatum. I mean, he was hitting shots. He was working the pick and roll to get Joel Embiid on a switch. And Joel Embiid just was non-existent defensively in this game. He was a turnstile on the perimeter. He did not protect the paint very much. And Jason Tatum just took full advantage of it. They had no fear of Joel Embiid at all. And Tatum made him pay. But we got to say this. The story of this game really for Boston, yeah, Jason Tatum scores 51, and that's all great and good. Their offense wasn't excellent. I mean, it was Jason Tatum. But their defense was nuts. This is the sort of defense that they played on that run to the finals last year. This was the defense that we've been wondering when it was going to show up in this series. Big switch in Game 6, adding Rob Williams back into the starting lineup, making him a more core piece to what they're doing defensively, essentially playing their starting lineup from last year's playoff run. And that worked. Rob Williams was great in this game. You could see just having the lob threat on the offensive end was important. But him and Al Horford did a wonderful job defending Embiid in this game. And every single time Boston sent the double, Joel Embiid felt it. And he just looked out of whack. Tip your hat to the Celtics defense.
I mean, Embiid is not a terrific passer. And so a lot of teams take the tack, like, listen, let's try to double team him. I do think like the Celtics mix it up a little bit, trying to delay those doubles, like you're saying. And Embiid did not respond. And I don't know how you, I don't know what we're supposed to make of Joel Embiid, the runaway MVP winner. And now we get to the postseason, and all right, maybe he's outmatched as far as his opponent. But when you look at the matchup, you're like, oh, Al Horford, oh, he struggles against him. And this is like, oh, well, that's not great. And then you have a few years ago, it's like, oh, well, Marc Gasol. Oh, well, he struggles against Marc Gasol. Like, there's just these specific guys, veteran dudes who can kind of shut him down. I know it's a whole team effort. This is the Celtics defense we have seen at times all year. We expected to see this year. But, yeah, an ugly offensive performance. That's two straight games now for the Sixers. They didn't hit 90. If we're talking, if we're going back to our 90s inflation, that's like scoring 70 back in the 1990s. They didn't score 90 in games 6 or 7. They just could not get the offense going. And, like, you got to think that they're kicking themselves, the Sixers are, for not taking advantage in game 6. Playing at home, having Jason Tatum get up to that unbelievably slow start, and not winning that game. Now it's too late. Jason Tatum worked out his issues at the end of game 6 and now continues just erupting everywhere. And the Celtics head into the conference finals.
Yeah, absolutely. James Harden was passing out of open layups this whole game. It was incredibly frustrating. And I'm going to credit the Celtics defense to that instead of saying that James Harden was just playing like crap. I think the Celtics defense, just the intensity that they started the game with, never waned. And there was a point in the second quarter where I think the entire vibe of the game shift. Mid second quarter, Sixers up 35-27. James Harden gets called for that flagrant where he catches Jaylen Brown on the way up to the basket, which he didn't even look like he was trying to attempt a shot, to be honest with you. Just trying to get a foul, gets called for a flagrant. Jaylen Brown hits the free throws, and all of a sudden, the Celtics start pressing a little bit defensively, picking up the ball at half court, just putting more pressure on the ball coming up and force some turnovers. And then there's a weird moment where, once again, James Harden involved, flops himself out of what should have been a pretty easy rebound for him, knocks down Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown gets a little tied up with the bench. George Niang reaches from the bench and grabs Jaylen Brown by the leg as he's trying to re-enter the play. Jaylen Brown gets pissed, picks up a tech, and then they have to go to the video review to figure out what Jaylen Brown was so pissed about. And, well, they saw George Niang grab his leg. George Niang gets a technical. Now, I actually think George Niang should have been ejected. That was it's a dirty move. You're not a part of the game. You weren't even going to play, buddy. So let's just get him out of there. It really was just kind of, to me, it was dirty basketball, obviously. But that sort of stretch there, that was the killer for Philly. Boston got mad. The crowd got into it, and those guys turned up the Jets defensively. The 76ers had a backcourt violation in a game 7. Their head was out of this game after that little blitz that Boston went on in the second quarter.
Well, I mean, if Harden's giving you this, and I don't know what the story is with Harden, where he was perfect in two of the games of this series, just absolutely perfect. You're like, oh, this is all-star player, all-NBA level player. But then if he's going to give you what, consecutive games where he struggles to shoot? He scores 22 points total in games 6 and 7. He makes 1 out of 11 threes combined in games 6 and 7. He turns the ball over 5 times in each of these games. Like, that's why you're not, that's why you're scoring 86 for a game, 88 for a game. And I know every time a team gets eliminated, you know, we have to, I guess we naturally all think, well, what next? But right. Sometimes it's a bigger what next than others. And this, specifically the Sixers, like, Harden's opting out. And, like, what do you do with that guy? And, you know, how do you build around Embiid? I mean, there's a lot of good to this series. I think you can take the tact of looking at just the matchup. Like, coming into the series, people didn't expect the Sixers to beat the Celtics. When you go up 1-0, when you go up 3-2 in the series, well, then it becomes maybe more painful with the loss. And just the manner which it occurred, where Joel Embiid is, I don't know if he's hobbled or not, but he's not playing well. And as you said, he was getting hunted, it seemed like. Jason Tatum's like, I can score whenever I want on this guy. Let's just keep doing this. And, like, you get a bad game from Embiid. Harden disappoints you again, and the Sixers are going to be dealing with just a lot of question marks around that franchise.
Yeah, immediately, you know, you start talking about failure of the process and everything that we go through every single year. But This one does feel a little bit different because I think they had, I think they believed in themselves a little bit, Keith. I think that Embiid getting the MVP, they were playing really good basketball. I thought that they had a better shot than everybody else gave them credit for against the Celtics because of Embiid. But Embiid's health, you know, this is kind of the story with him. He has a hard time staying healthy. And this is why, you know, he struggles to play the games to win MVP awards. And so, you know, that's the conversation that's probably going to happen all summer. But beyond just James Harden going somewhere else, I think the Sixers, team has to look different.
Dave, the Sixers were undefeated in games that Harden shot over 27.5%. So make 3/10 of your shots and the Sixers unbeatable. But, like, he didn't do it in four of the games.
Yeah, 3/10 of your at-bats equaling hits is a Hall of Fame baseball player.
There we go.
But in basketball, right, you're garbage.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah, just
he
a garbage.
He batted .273 this game.
He had two amazing games out of seven, and the rest of them were just flat duds. And, you know, in this game, he started out slow, and I'm thinking, okay, we're getting a little bit of this Harden. He's going to rope-a-dope. He's going to let these guys burn out a little bit. He's going to let Embiid carry him early. But it didn't happen for him. And frankly, he never got aggressive. He never got aggressive. I think the Sixers probably have to look at every single option ahead of the summer and figure something out, because I don't think this team is going to have the juice. James Harden, if you bring him back, I mean, he's just older.
Yeah, it's true.
You think his game's going to get any better?
I do like it every time I read a write-up and it's like, well, next year he'll be a year older. Yep, everyone will.
Yeah.
Everyone in the entire team. No, like Harden, his entire, even the Brooklyn series, it was a sweep. Two out of the four games, he was atrocious, just beyond horrible. So I don't know what you do as a franchise when you have to make these decisions. Like, we can't really replace the guy, and when he's at the peak of his powers, not his peak of his powers, when he's just playing pretty good, we're kind of unbeatable. But then you have to deal with this. I don't know. It's a conversation and a decision for someone way higher up on the food chain than me. Good luck, Daryl Morey, with all your future endeavors.
I think Timothy Santiago here in the YouTube chat kind of says what we're all thinking, even though this is a team that literally just one game short of the conference finals. But the Sixers are bad. If you only saw that game, that would be my takeaway. That's not a championship level basketball team.
I mean, anytime, again, with the struggles of your top guys in this game, when you're shooting, what was it, like 37% as a team, you're scoring, like, it was like, what was it, like a 59-23 extended run or something like that?
Yeah.
I mean, it was tied in the third quarter. They were up almost double digits in the second quarter, and you're like, all right, they're playing hard. We're going to get something. We're going to get a nice, awesome, tense, down to the wire or something. And then, no, Jason Tatum said, no, sir, I am going to destroy this team. And Tatum, I mean, again, what a bounce back from, and what a roller coaster for the Celtics. I mean, they've gone from, like, title favorites to, like, can Joe Mazzulla do it? To, like, what do we do if they lose to the Sixers? To now, Tatum's like, I got you. Score 51. We're now prohibitive favorites to make the NBA Finals.
Well, here's a little note. And to that point, this is now the third head coach that Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum have taken to an Eastern Conference Finals.
That's amazing.
Third head coach, man. And look, you know, I'm a coach. I'm a coach guy, and I say this often. I think coaches in the NBA are a little bit overrated. The management stuff is the important stuff, and Mazzulla certainly could use some help with his timeout management, things of that nature. But the truth is, these guys, they're the reason that they make the conference finals and get through Philly. They're the reason that they made the finals last year, and it's about having the players on the court. Coaches just need to stay out of the way and set these guys up for success. And you can argue Joe Mazzulla did that. The vibe seemed good. I don't know what he said at halftime. Probably nothing, because they were playing really good basketball.
Yeah.
Just go in quietly, hand out Gatorades, and get back out there and kick ass. And that's what they did. Jason Tatum was just incredible in this game. And I mean, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum as a duo, 76 points on the 76ers in a game 7.
Hey. Nice.
Not bad.
Well, you can give Mazzulla credit for in game 6 and 7. He shortened it, his rotation. He said, I got 7 guys. I'm just playing my 7 guys. And he rotated them through the struggles in game 6. And, like, you have guys like Marcus Smart. I mean, Marcus Smart deserves a lot of credit. Marcus Smart kept the Celtics alive in game 6 while Tatum was trying to figure some stuff out. And then, like we already said, the Horford's defense. Like, Horford just being able to have a guy, 37-year-old veteran center, who the Sixers traded for, you know, years ago, being like, we just got to get rid of this guy. We don't want to go through him anymore. And now he's back on the Celtics giving you these huge minutes. Yeah, I mean, it's quite a squad they have. And when they put these performances together where Tatum and Brown are doing their thing and the defense is on, you're like, oh, yeah, that's why everyone thought they were going to win the title a month ago or 2 months ago.
Yeah, you mentioned Marcus Smart, who I thought had a really good defensive series. Last year's Defensive Player of the Year completely left off the All-NBA defense teams this year.
Don't worry. Hey, he won the Hustle Award second year in a row, Dave.
That's why we forgot about him. All right, let's
got his recognition.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Let's move to Friday because, you know what? The conference finals is set in both conferences. The Los Angeles Lakers, they snuffed out the Warriors 122-101 in game six. And Keith, Steph Curry's been beaten. So now I can get off that train. And the Lakers did it in convincing fashion. LeBron James was pretty amazing in this game. Like, he saved up for this game. 30 points in this game. Just came out with a focus, Keith, that you don't see it all that often from LeBron until you get to this point. But when you see it, you know it immediately. It's like, you know, the photo where he's got his hands on his knees and he's kind of breathing out of his nose, like ready. That's how he entered this game. Him and Anthony Davis were just, it was straight business for them from the opening tip.
Yeah, I mean, I would call it a flawless performance from LeBron James. This is a guy everyone, I think, always says it, and it's accurate and it's true. We can just keep reminding ourselves. Not only top two player of all time, but one of the smartest players of all times, one of the most competitive or just engaged competitor, knowing what's needed each night. Maybe in the regular season, knowing it's not needed tonight for me to dig deep into the bag and put myself through the strain of this. But knowing in the playoffs, okay, if we're on the road in a game five, we can lose these. I know this. But knowing in this game six at home, I have to do everything. This is everything right now at home. We have to defend our home court advantage. We can't have this series go seven, have to go back to San Francisco. So like this one, he's like, I have to do it. And absolutely, he just dominated this game.
It was also a strategic move. You know, right off the bat, Andrew Wiggins has the fractured intercostal thing and the cartilage fracture in his rib. And they showed video of him trying to warm it up pregame to see if he could go. Because it was a pain tolerance issue. But it was pretty clear that he was struggling to keep LeBron out of the post. LeBron went at him immediately. That was just such a smart move. He went at him on the correct block to make him have to use the left side of his body to keep LeBron out of the block. They eventually have to move things around. That's the sort of game that if you look at the 2015 finals when Kyrie got hurt and Kevin Love wasn't out there, and LeBron just slowed everything down, went post up, and just really played inside-out basketball. That's how the Lakers started this game. I thought it was a genius move, and it really did put the pressure on Golden State's defense because Wiggins could not hold him up. So he had the defense all sped up just from the jump. And the Lakers, man, they made some shots too early on, and that helped spur their run. And the Warriors just never got anything going. Steph Curry, 32 points, but 4-14 from three. Klay Thompson, 2 of 12 from 3, only 8 points. Jordan Poole, 7 points in this game. So you got 15 points from Klay Thompson and Jordan Poole. And you know, Steph Curry just had no help.
I mean, Klay Thompson never found it in this series. Awful. We were all, I think most people are like, all right, game 6 Klay, he's legendary. He'll finally come back around. It never came back around. And like, I think it's fair to say he shot him out of this game. Like, he He was bad on defense, and then his offense was atrocious. 3 for 19, overall from the field. Just a struggle. Going back to the Lakers and just LeBron focusing in on the matchup with Wiggins, another strategic thing they did that Darvin Ham did was they changed the starting lineup. This hadn't been the series for Jared Vanderbilt. And they said, all right, the Warriors are playing some more small ball. We're not effective right now with Vanderbilt out there. So they went with a smaller lineup, had Schroeder playing alongside D'Angelo Russell and Austin Reeves. So that was in like a way they adapted that worked. And like, you just saw that this Lakers team, it was one where, so this Warriors team all year struggled. And, you know, they struggled in the regular season. We're like, oh, but in the playoffs, they'll come around. And they keep flashing that stat. Steve Kerr and the Warriors are 19-0 in the playoffs in the Western Conference, which, again, conveniently leaves out they lost in the play-in once. But it's still, they were still undefeated. And we're thinking, all right, but it's going to come around. It's going to come around. But then I see this first half, and I'm like, the Lakers don't have the juice. The Lakers have the juice. Like, the Lakers are the better team. Like, at this point, we've seen the series. The Lakers are legitimately good. And I think most people thought maybe it felt like the door shut on maybe not the dynasty, but definitely the season for the Warriors. The end of the half, you have Klay Thompson with a wide-open three-pointer. He airballs it. Dante DiVincenzo gets the rebound. Anthony Davis blocks it. And then Austin Reeves pulls a Steph Curry, essentially, drills a half-quarter at the halftime buzzer to make it a 10-point game. As a Grizzlies fan, I'm like, this happened. I looked it up. I'm like, did it happen 8 years ago to the day? Because Steph Curry did this in a game six against the Grizzlies, where he hit a 60-footer to go up like 8 or something going into the fourth quarter against the Grizzlies when they closed out the Grizzlies back in 2015. And when Austin Reeves made that shot, and Austin's had an amazing game, it was like, yep, the Lakers are the team. I don't have any faith at all that the Warriors are going to put up a fight. And in the second half, it was not. It was the Lakers understanding we are better, and we're going to take this team out.
Just the numbers in this game are kind of hilarious. The Warriors and the Lakers both hit 13 three-pointers apiece. The Warriors attempted 22 more threes, Keith.
Yeah.
22 extra threes, but the same amount of makes. Well, 20 offensive rebounds for the Warriors to only 6 for the Lakers. So the Warriors won the offensive rebounding battle. Did not get beat necessarily on the three-point battle, at least in points. But they fouled 30 times in this game, 42 free throws for the Lakers. And Keith, it's a difference in the style of play. The Lakers continuously attack and put pressure on the rim, and they played big, and the Warriors were just too small. That's exactly what happened. That shot them in the foot. It killed them all year. And the Lakers finally put them out of their misery, man. 42 free throws to only 14 for the Golden State Warriors. And that's a stylistic issue.
Yeah. Also, you look at the three-point totals throughout the series. The Lakers won two games where they made 6 threes. Like, they didn't even need to make three-pointers, you know, to beat this Warriors team in this matchup. When they do make three-pointers, that's why you can give up all the offensive rebounds and still come up on top. And important to us, Dave, big fans of Kevon Looney, he was positive plus-minus. He pulled down 8 of those offensive rebounds all by himself.
Yeah, +4 for the game. He only played 26 minutes. And you know, I stand by this. When Kevon Looney plays every competitive minute, Steph Curry, yet to lose a playoff series. So let's go to the Eastern Conference because, you know, as we just saw, the Celtics make the Eastern Conference Finals. Their opponent, Miami Heat, who closed their series against the Knicks 4-2 with a 96-92 victory. And Keith, the story of this game, awful. Awful.
This was
ugly.
This was a 90s Heat Knicks game. Like, oh, both teams shot what 40% or worse. Yeah, that checks. That tracks. That's what my eyes saw. It was disgusting. The Knicks, man. I don't know what. Again, as we move into that, what does this team do next? I don't know. You keep Jalen Brunson?
Yes.
That's the end of the list. That's all. Everything else? But yeah, do whatever you want.
I think you got to keep Brunson. You got to keep Grimes. But everybody else is probably on the table. Mitchell Robinson is pretty good. But, you know, you run into issues when you get into the playoffs. But really, man, the Miami Heat's defense just absolutely ate the Knicks alive. Julius Randle could get nothing going, was 3 of 14 from the field. Just a bad series for him in general. RJ Barrett, 1 of 10. You know, again, this strategy of attacking Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo just did not work. It was an absolute failure, and they kept trying to do it. And then on the other side, man, Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo got it done offensively. 24 points and 23 points, respectively. You had Max Strus contributing 14 points. You got Kyle Lowry off the bench, giving him 11. And this is just like another one of those Heat wins. If they can ugly the game up enough, it doesn't matter if their offense is humming or not, because they can drag you in the mud. And once you get in the mud, you're going to lose that fight, period.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to really test the Heat, this matchup with the Celtics, because the Celtics can defend. We know the Celtics can defend. Obviously, the way they did in Game 6 and Game 7 is going to be plenty good. But the Celtics are such a high-volume three-point team that when those three-pointers go in, I don't know if Spoelstra can do his magic. And I don't know, duct tape and spit and paper mache his way into, like, forming these guys into, you know, making the finals. It's going to be a tough ask of Jimmy Butler and the guys to do that in this matchup. But it's still an unbelievable story and an unbelievable accomplishment. I mean, both, of course, the Lakers and the Heat coming from the play-in, the Heat losing to the Hawks in the play-in, being down to the Bulls in the fourth quarter, and to now, you know, basically stun all the experts to end up here. For the Knicks, I mean, I think when they won that game 5, you're like, okay, maybe this finally, the Cinderella Heat, maybe they can turn back into the pumpkin. But no, like this home crowd for Miami gave them enough energy to scrap it out, to fight it out. And I don't know, it never felt like the Knicks are going to do anything in this. They were just kind of like on their last legs. I don't know if the vibes were real. Like, it felt like bad vibes with this team the whole way down. But the Heat can just feel good about dispatching this rival once again. And, like, Spoelstra, he just lives in the conference finals. Like, what in the world? The guy, no matter what, so many different iterations of this Miami Heat franchise that he's gotten the team into the conference finals.
Well, you listen,
achievement.
When you're constantly getting guys like, you know, Gabe Vincent, Max Strus, you know, superstar-level players.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah,
Caleb,
yeah.
Martin. You know,
you got
and
these super teams. I heard Strus and Cody Zeller were working out in the offseason, and they're like, we're going to find a way to play together this season.
Yeah, I mean, the guy is the best coach in the league, hands down. I mean, yeah. And again, back to my previous point, I don't think coaches are that important. Eric Spoelstra is. That's Spoelstra a difference. Is. That is a huge difference. So, you know, looking at the conference finals, Keith, like, it's a rehash of the final four from the bubble, which, by the way, we should start calling this point. This is the final four. Like, a little bit more weight there, right?
I'm in it.
You should
be
honored.
Yeah.
You should be honored. Like, we should actually respect the teams that lose conference finals, because you're one of the last four teams standing. So we're in the final four. It's the same final four from the bubble. The Lakers are vastly different than they were in the bubble. But I would argue, when you look at them play in the playoffs, Keith, tell me how you feel about this. This team is playing much more like a 2 or 3 seed than they play-in team,
sure.
Right? And
yeah,
that's how big of a difference it is between pre-trade deadline and post-trade deadline for this team. And I was trying to tell anybody who would listen, because I was trying to watch as much of this team as possible down the stretch, they have fight. This is going to be, I think the Western Conference is, I think they're going to win the title. I don't know why it feels that way. The competition has just been a little bit tougher. You know, this season was so weird. I think the competition out West is a little bit tougher than we give it credit for. And it just feels like the winner has to come from the West. I don't know. Boston looks really, really good after that game 7. But if you had asked me to talk about them after game 5, I probably would have felt different. You know, it's game by game with them. Obviously with Miami, their warts are just so visible, but somehow they don't matter. And at some point they have to, because that's just how basketball works. Yeah. It feels like, I don't know. I think the underdog definitely is going to come out of the East. I'm not going to say that Boston can't win or Miami can't win, but it certainly feels like Lakers and Nuggets are sort of our pre-finals finals.
I don't know if I agree, because I still feel like the Celtics, maybe it's just recency bias of today's game, where I'm like, oh yeah, this is what we saw. This is reminding myself that I thought this team was the most talented team and fit the best. Like, oh, this is last year's team plus Malcolm Brogdon. And it's dipped recently. You know, they didn't finish the season on the strongest of notes. And then, of course, falling down 3-2 to the Sixers, you're like, oh, well, maybe not. But I don't know. I still feel like the Celtics are incredible. I guess I'll continue underestimating the Heat to my own error. They'll continue throwing that at my face. I do think the Lakers are—they're excellent. They're a great team, and they can beat you in so many different ways. And you got to give all the credit, not just to LeBron James and Anthony Davis, who of course the elite talent leading the way, but Darvin Ham and the rest of the roster, and the way they've stayed ready, and the way Ham keeps them engaged and ready to play. Whether or not, hey, this is a Rui Hachimura series. Oh, it's not. Okay, we're gonna go to Lonnie Walker. Lonnie Walker, it's your turn to go. And like Austin Reeves, hey, you were great in early against the Grizzlies, and then you struggled for a while, and now he's circled back around, and this team is just finding stuff, and they're sticking with Dennis Schroeder, and like D'Angelo Russell can shake off a 1-for-10 game and not closing. And you don't think, like, D'Angelo Russell, when he was on the Timberwolves, you think he's cool sitting on the bench after going 1-for-10 at the end of the game? I don't think so. I think on this squad, there's a lot of trust. There's a lot of buy-in from everybody. It appears, at least from an outsider's perspective, that like they're all in, man. And like they're playing so well. And when you see like healthy LeBron, healthy AD, it all makes sense again. You're like, oh, that's why what everyone was so scared of a few years ago before, you know.
Reminder of the bubble. Yeah, reminder of the bubble, man. And I talked about this, you know, they didn't have to travel much in the Warriors series. You know, like it's a short flight for them. I think that stuff matters for them. The Denver flight, I think it's more about the bus ride or whatever from the airport in Denver. That's probably about as long as the flight to Denver. But Jokic and AD is the matchup we're going to watch. I don't know how much they're going to have AD guarding Jokic like one-on-one, because I know they like to have him in that roamer role. And, you know, this is stuff we're going to talk about all week. But this series is pretty fascinating. But the Lakers have been fun as hell to watch. I broke a lot of people's hearts when I said, hey, this Lakers team is fun. They've got great vibes, because people really just want to hate the Lakers. And unfortunately for them, Darvin Ham really has the vibes right.
I'm definitely a lifelong Lakers hater. Like when I see the jersey, I'm like, I'm against that team. But when I watch these guys play, this collection of individuals play together, like they're really good. And they play a very fun brand of basketball. And like having... like, just thinking of the matchups are going to be great. Like, I do think they might start with Jared Vanderbilt, like, on Jokic and try to just put AD on Aaron Gordon, and LeBron's going to guard Michael Porter Jr., and, like, there's so many different ways you can do it. And so, like, that's going to be – it's going to be a fun chess match to watch if the Lakers can kind of get the can get AD on to Jokic, then Jokic can pull him away from the basket. There's just so many – I don't know. Those two teams are really good. I trust their depth on each squad. You know, like their top eight or so, where it's a great matchup. I mean, I think the Nuggets look better, but the way the Lakers have played this whole postseason has been so sharp that, I'm extremely excited to see how that series goes.
Yep. Well, that's going to do it for today's show, folks. Thank you guys for listening. Thanks for joining us live on YouTube. Remember, we're doing this throughout the playoffs, so after every conference finals and finals game, you can catch us over on the Athletic NBA Show YouTube channel in case you're listening to this on podcast. So come and hang out. The comment section has been pretty vigorous tonight. I mean, a Game 7 kind of gets people riled up. A lot of sad Phillies fan, but a lot of them giving credit to the Celtics, which is good to see because the Celtics are pretty good. For Keith Parrish, I'm Dave DeFore, and this has been the Weekend Update Daily Ding on the Athletic NBA Show.
Ding, ding.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.